And if you heard last night's show with George Norrie after he had been on with Larry King Live and did exceedingly well, I might add, then you already know a little bit about what's coming up tonight. Both an update on Bigfoot. Perhaps you've heard the story about the reputed, anyway, audio that has been recorded of Bigfoot, which we'll talk about with Todd Standing coming up, but also some other updates as well from the man who knows everything about the cryptozoological giant. And then next hour, I don't think you want to miss this story, the little known and never known as well before story of Hitler's secret mission to kidnap all of the important top cardinals and bishops in the Vatican, including the Pope, very likely to execute all of the cardinals, perhaps to also kill the Pope, and then most importantly to loot the treasures of the Vatican. And the SS Nazi general that stood in his way, never before had, I mean, the details in this book and what you will learn about this failed, intentionally failed effort to kidnap the Pope will astound you. And this secret mission has rarely gotten the kind of examination that you will hear tonight. I've been tracking stories about the distinct evil of the Nazi Empire for years, and yet I have, there's things in this book, I just, so many oh wow moments in the research of Dan Kurzman. You don't want to miss it coming up next hour. Some crypto news to get to before Todd Standing on the way. It's Coast to Coast AM, and my name's Ian Punnett. Before we get to Todd Standing coming up in just a moment and the crypto news for tonight, let me just do a little housekeeping thing if I can on Coast to Coast AM. We are in the midst of a free Streamlink weekend. You can sign up and get details on the homepage. The free weekend runs through Monday. Free weekenders are able to download 8 free shows from the past few months, including the one I did a couple of months ago with a Charles Lindbergh Jr. that people are still talking about. Everybody's still waiting to see whether or not he'll end up being right. And try out exciting features such as the classic shows, the live broadcast audio clips, and the newest edition, the podcast with iTunes, which automatically downloads our most recent shows. So go take a look at it online, coasttocoastam.com, where you will also see some great crypto news stories we'll get to. For some regular headlines, President Vladimir Putin has angered Americans at a high level with his plans to deploy a missile shield in Eastern Europe. Formally notified the NATO governments on Saturday that Russia will suspend its obligations under the Conventional Forces in Europe Treaty, a key Cold War era arms limitation agreement. They've put a deadline of 150 days for this action by Putin, and we'll know more whether or not they can negotiate a new settlement within that time frame. Democrats John Edwards and Hillary Rodham Clinton, considering themselves among the top presidential candidates, were caught by Fox News microphones discussing their desire to limit future joint appearances to exclude some lower rivals after the forum in Detroit on Thursday. I think this is important because of conversations we've had in the past about some of the quote-unquote lesser candidates that are out there that have a lot of popularity on the web and on this show. John Edwards says we should try to have a more serious and smaller group. That's what he's overheard saying. Meanwhile, Senator Clinton agrees, saying we've got to cut the number. They're not serious. She also says that she thought their campaigns had already tried to limit the debates and says, quote, "We've got to get back to it." Immediately, Representative Dennis Kucinich responded that any group that's smaller, he ought to be automatically included in because on the campaign trail, nobody's smaller than he is. Osama bin Laden has a new video out, but investigators aren't sure how old the tape is. The tape praising jihadists may have been made recently, but bin Laden's part may be old. According to Wang Guang in crypto news, which you can find more on at coasttocoastam.com, Wang Guang, a name that's funny in like every language except Chinese, director of the Weather Modification Department in China, says each of China's more than 30 provinces and province-level municipalities today boast a weather modification base. employing more than 32,000 people across China, 100 anti-aircraft guns, which launch these weather modification missiles essentially into the air, about 5,000 special rocket launchers, and 30-odd aircraft across the country, all geared toward weather modification. Let's see, what radio show had been talking about that forever before it started to make mainstream news? Ours is the largest artificial weather program in the world in terms of equipment, size, and budget, Wang said, adding that the annual nationwide budget for weather modification in China is between $60 million and $90 million U.S. dollars. For a largely agrarian country like China, the weather was thought of as far too important to be left to the whim of gods or nature. As a result, Chinese scientists began researching man-made rain as far back as 1958, and now China's weather officials have been charged with another important task, ensuring clear skies for the Summer Olympic Games next year. So they've brought in an important outside consultant, Simon Bar Sinister. We'll see what happens. Reuters reports a walking robot that adapts to different terrain is helping scientists understand how humans move and could one day lead to improved treatment for spinal cord and other injuries. That according to German researchers on Friday. Previously, Runbot, the robot's inventors, said the one-foot-tall machine could only walk forward on flat surfaces and would topple over when encountering a slope. But using an infrared eye, the robot can now detect an incline in its path and adjust its gait. You can see more on that at coasttocoastam.com. A key is the robot's brain. In this case, the infrared eye connected to the control circuits, which directs the machine to change its gait when needed. Studying a robot to gain a better understanding of how different parts of the body work when walking could have practical applications to improve healthcare in humans. Scientists have a way to go, however. As of right now, the robot takes 4 or 5 tries before it corrects itself and inexplicably seems like it cannot avoid running into ironing boards. Hey, that's just like me. One guy who has found his own scientific help in walking is also in China. In fact, there's a couple of Chinese stories here. We'll try and get them all in. When Peng Shulin's body was cut literally in half by a truck in 1995, it was a little short of a medical miracle that he lived. It took a team of more than 20 doctors to save his life. Skin was grafted from his head to seal what was left of his torso. But the legless Mr. Peng was left standing only 2.5 feet tall. Doctors at the China Rehabilitation Research Center in Beijing found out about Mr. Peng's plight late last year and devised a plan to get him walking again. And you can see the photos of this, it's fascinating. They came up with an ingenious way to allow him to walk on his own, creating a sophisticated egg cup-like casing to hold his body with 2 bionic legs attached to it. He's been taking his first steps around the center with the aid of these specially adapted legs and a resized walking frame. Go take a look at it. Mr. Peng, who has to learn how to walk again, said it's delighted. He's delighted with the device. It's very cool. The pictures are at coasttocoastam.com. Look at the link. While you're there, check out the photos of the world's tallest man, Bao Shixun, shaking hands with He Pingping, who might be Earth's shortest man. It's one of those contrived press photos. Hey, let's get the world's tallest Chinese guy with the world's smallest Chinese guy together and see what happens kind of things, but it's really interesting. You can see what happens, by the way, in the picture. In order to shake hands, if you look at the photo, you'll see there's another guy steadying He Pingping so that Bao Shixun doesn't, you know, accidentally greet him out the window. Best part of the story? As it turns out, the world's tallest man and the world's smallest man actually hail from the same region of Inner Mongolia. And wouldn't you know it, went to the same high school at the same time and never knew each other. Different circle of friends, I guess. Frank Donnelly from the Detroit News reports from Marquette, Michigan. In the middle of the night, a group tried to lure an elusive beast from its lair deep in the woods. A man banged on a tree with a stick. Another beat his chest, Tarzan-like. Another uttered deep, guttural screams. And then seconds after the last yell, from the blackness surrounding them, came a low-pitched howl that made the searchers shiver. It was Bigfoot, at least they claim. The searchers not only believe the legendary mannish ape is frolicking throughout the forest east of this Upper Peninsula community, but also captured its mournful yelp on tape Thursday night. The Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, the California group running the search, will add the audio recording to what it said are footprints, sightings, and other mounting evidence from past expeditions. "I'm not a believer, I'm a knower," said the group's president, Matt Moneymaker. "You had to be in total denial to say that none exist." Don Young, a hunting and fishing guide from Phillips, Wisconsin, said he has wanted to prove the existence of Bigfoot ever since spotting one near his home a second time in 2004. "It's a need," he said. "There's a need for me to prove it." Since the last sighting, he has devoted 60 hours a week looking for the beast. Sound familiar? Todd Standing can relate to this kind of obsession, and he joins us here on Coast to Coast AM. Thank you so much, Todd.
Thanks for having me.
I'll give you a standing ovation for, I'm sure you hear that sort of thing all the time, but thank you for coming. Now, Todd, tell me, do you know this guy, Matt Moneymaker, and this search that's going on in the UP?
No, I do not. I really have nothing to do with that. I'm actually more, I don't know how to say it in any other way than I'm, like, I've advanced to the point where I can track these animals repeatedly. I mean, I don't have audio tapes and that kind of stuff because I've never really heard any audio recordings of the animals. I always support any hypothesis of the species that would allow it to remain absolutely, you know, untouched and away from human beings. And what's strange about what a lot of the Bigfoot research people do is they seem to have exceptional success. They almost go out every time and always have success. And dealing with hunters, I mean, hunters, they go out and they hunt white-tailed buck deers, and they'll go out, you know, 100 times and maybe have success once. So, I mean, whatever they're doing, it's far more successful than me. What I'm doing is I need to find a new domicile. I'm the guy that has the repeatability in the videos. I've shot two pieces of Bigfoot videos on two separate occasions. And what's significant about especially one of the videos, every time you watch a Bigfoot video, it's either a man in a suit or it's a new species of primate, because no other species on the earth can walk bipedally. And in both my videos, you can see the animal. Well, in the video three that I have, the animal moves entirely bipedally. And I was able to remove the ability to, or the probability of it being a man in a suit because I had a kineticist analyze the video. And he said that animal ran that trek faster than the fastest man on the planet could. So if it's not a human being in a suit, what is it? And it is a new species of primate. And my team and I repeatedly can do this. We don't go out into the woods with a camera and go, boom, there's Bigfoot. It's a huge amount of planning. You have to be very strategic about what you're doing. From my knowledge, and again, my specific knowledge is it's Gigantopithecus is the species that we're studying, and it's about Rocky Mountain Gigantopithecus. It goes all the way back into, just like you were talking, the Chinese people, which have the last known Gigantopithecus domicile, which is a couple hundred thousand years old, where they found teeth and whatnot. It's way up in a mountain, and that's what I'm studying is Rocky Mountain Bigfoot. So
just so I can understand, and I appreciate your diplomatic language, but it seems to me, if I'm going to get to the bottom line on this, you're suspicious of anybody who claims to have an audio tape like that.
Well, no, I mean, I don't know what's real or what's not. I've never heard, there's been a lot of Bigfoot recordings and whatnot, and I'm not suspicious of anybody. I just try to, and really, what's the point of that? It's not really something, you know, that's, anybody could make an audio recording. I have an audio recording, actually, that I had from years ago, and it's not evidence. All the audio recording did to me, or did for me, is it brought other people that said, hey, that's a real Bigfoot sound, and I've heard that sound, and people came to me and said, well, I know that was a Bigfoot, and I'll show you why, and then I started getting chronicles together, and I started talking with other people that recognized that sound, but it's not real evidence. Even video evidence is not real evidence, because, you know, like with the Patterson film, it could be a man in a suit.
Right, right.
Except with my video three, because my animal runs faster than the fastest man on the planet. But I'll be the first one to step forward and say, video evidence will never be enough. And actually, my advancements have gone so far, there's so much scientific repeatability in what I do, that if I made my knowledge public, anybody could get within 40 yards of these animals. And I have to get now species protection, which is my primary focus, what I talked about with Art Bell last time, is I'm working on species protection here in Canada where I live, And I'm next going to the United States. I'm going to begin my petition there to get species protection for them again, because I've made the discovery and I can repeatedly do this again, and I will do this again. Next time on my next expedition, what I actually have to have is I'm going to take a skeptical anthropologist with me, a person who does not believe in Bigfoot, and I've been on the BBC, and I'm going to get a big name guy from the BBC who absolutely thinks Bigfoot is not true whatsoever. And I'll take them and I'll show them what I've seen, and I'll come back with new video evidence and new DNA evidence. And, you know, with hopefully with these big name people believing in what they've seen and what I've showed them, you know, that at that point, if I haven't got species protection for these animals, I will. And once there's species protection, the next step is species recognition. And once I have all that, I can train forestry officers to do what I do and get within, you know, distance of the animals and to learn how to study them, and the proper scientific, ethical study of the species can begin. Because my team and I will never kill one of these animals.
Right.
It's not only, that's something that I talked about with Art Bell last time, that's all not only something that we won't do, it's something that you shouldn't do. Because if you go out there, these animals survive and evade in communities. That's how they stand together. We've actually figured out how they survive in the mountains. They're nocturnal animals. Most Bigfoot researchers agree on that. So what they do in the mountains, they strategically place themselves, they triangulate themselves in three spots, where if they see people coming, they simply back away. And they have the high point. They have the strategic advantage by being up somewhere in the mountain. It's precisely the same species that the Chinese people discovered in their domicile that I'm actually working with right now, 100,000-year-old Gigantopithecus DNA, teeth. And that's something else I'd like to do, is I'd like to map the genome of Gigantopithecus. There's so much information that I have for you right now, it's kind of hard to know where exactly to start.
Well, let me ask you a question, because I just want to make sure I understood, because I thought you made an interesting point about hunters. You said, you know, they can go out 100 times and only catch one white-tailed deer, yet they always seem to go out and find what they want with a Bigfoot. But then it seemed to me that you said you can get us at any time within 40 feet of a Bigfoot at any time. So somewhere along the line, you figured out a pretty high success rate. You've got enough information that you can get close enough to these guys pretty much on demand.
Well, no, that's not true. I mean, what I'm saying is, if I take somebody on an expedition and I have them for, let's say, a month, in a month, I could get them within 40 yards.
Oh, I see. Okay, so within a month, you can.
Time and a lot of work. I mean, for God's
sake. Oh, sure. No, I get that. No, I totally get that distinction. No, that a month. Yeah. No, I totally get that.
Yeah.
So when you talk about species protection, tell me a little bit more about what you've been able to do in Canada that you'd like to see in the United States.
Well, I have a documentary film of the reality of the species. All a lot of significant information that I have. I took it and toured it around a little bit, and everywhere I took it, basically about 90% of the people that showed up to watch my film signed my petition. I was able to gather thousands of signatures. I sent it off to the House of Commons. It was certified as a legal document, and then I received a response. Obviously, it wasn't passed, and I didn't expect it to be passed the first time, because you know, they're not really going to take you seriously. They're going to think, you know, it's about unicorns and the Loch Ness, and I don't know that unicorns or Loch Ness aren't real. I'm not chastising people who believe in that stuff, but this is a real species. It's a Gigantopithecus. It's a real animal. And when I take scientists even on the tour, basic knowledge out there, people start to begin to understand that there's at least an exceptional possibility that these animals exist.
Right.
And that's what I'm working for. Even a big reason I'm in the coast-to-coast thing is, you know, Art sprung it on me last time, the whole bugs issue. And the whole, you know, he has a body somewhere, and you know, I was hoping to have a show again. I know Art's retired and whatnot, and I sort of missed it. Last time I talked to I was on Coast to Coast, it was April, and I didn't know Art was going to retire right away. I went and we comprised an actual movie that we made, or a DVD, a 20-minute film for Bugs, and we sent him a letter, and we were hoping to pursue that. A lot of people, the Coast to Coast fans that know about the Bugs issue, you know, my team and I seriously pursued it. We began a scientific investigation of everything Bugs says. And, you know, I had questions for him and all sorts of things, even a breakdown of his situation of how he got near the most elusive animal on the planet.
Well, Todd Standing, I look forward to seeing a copy of the Bugs video that you shot. I'd love to see and hear more about that. So we'll have to do another show on this coming up shortly. Have you ever aired the audio tape that you have of what you think might be a Bigfoot?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually had it on my website initially. The problem with it, it's actually video one, and it's not even on my website anymore. What happened was initially, the videographer who was there that shot that video, he took it and sold it off and made a profit on it. And also by doing that, I believe he augmented the sound and whatnot. The sound is still the original sound, But what he did was he just took it and did some adjustments to it. And,
right.
Of course, now that that's happened, I can't be affiliated with it because everything I do is raw. There can be no disputing, you know, it's just raw evidence. But
okay.
But it did, again, it brought people that are aware of encounters that they've had with this
right.
disease and didn't even know it was Bigfoot. They said, hey, whatever you saw, I saw because I heard that same sound.
Let me ask you.
Compared to a chainsaw sound, I guess they said. So.
Well, I want to ask you, because I think it would be interesting, because I think there would be zoologists out there that might specialize in animal calls, and I wonder whether that tape has ever been run by them so that they could at least hear it and say, well, that sounds like an X or a Y or a Z, but that they, if they say, I've never heard that before, that might bolster the claim that it is, in fact, Bigfoot.
Yeah, well, actually, I have a team, and one of my team is a biologist, and he took it around, and he recognized the sound immediately because he had an encounter of his own. And it's been passed around. We've done our due diligence, and it's really, again, what you come to realize is it's just not enough evidence. We're looking for real concrete evidence, which in the end will have to be, you know, a body. That's what just has to happen.
Oh, yeah.
And these animals aren't immortal. They live and die. It's just going to take time to ethically do that because you can't go out and execute one of them.
Right.
I mean, species that survives together and stands together, defends itself together. When you ask Diane Fossey, what she was so upset about were baby gorillas being put in zoos because she knew 14 gorillas would die defending that baby gorilla. And what I'm concerned about is if somebody does go out there and executes one of these animals, they're not like bears. They don't live solitary existence. They stand together. They survive together. All the chronicles out there, things like Ape Canyon and research that I've done myself, shows that this species is devoted to each other and they stand together. So if you go out there and you kill one, you may have to, if you want to claim that body and bring it back, you may have to wipe out the whole troop of these animals.
Right.
And if that's the last existing troop, you've proved Bigfoot exists. Congratulations. You may have just wiped out the species as well.
Well,
stuff like that we're fighting against.
Anthropologically speaking, the Bigfoot, as you see them in the genetics of it all, that they fall more into the family of man than they would, say, into the family of ape. That they're more hominid than they would be animal.
Actually, it's the species is scientifically classified already. It's called Gigantopithecus.
Right. I'm just asking. I know that, and I've seen the special on that on the History Channel and everything. I'm just asking you to define for people that don't know. Does that puts it more into the hominid family of man category? Correct.
Actually, they classify it with orangutans, but the truth is there's so little known about it. Like they don't even know if it was bipedal. Even the animal that existed for certain a few hundred thousand years ago, all they have is teeth and a lower jawbone. When people come and ask me why have there never been bones found, well, the answer is I don't really know. But whatever the reason is, this species has existed for certain for 6 million years, and we've never found anything but teeth. So whatever the answer for it is, we know this species existed for at least 5.9 million years, and we never found anything other than a lower jawbone and lower jawbone teeth. So we need so much more information. We even need a frontal view of Bigfoot. We need a better,
sure.
A real high-definition look at the species because we can extrapolate so much evidence from that, even how big their eyes are, whether they have a point on the top of their head, how their jaw is, even what kind of teeth that they show, how big their nose is, whether their face is flat or not. There's so much information that primatologists can extrapolate from a really clear-cut frontal view. And I don't know, the Patterson film, there's so much controversy involving it, but if you want to take that as a view, you know, it's and just even what eyewitness accounts are. And there are tremendous eyewitness accounts out there. We're talking doctors, police, judges,
right.
lawyers, a president of the United States, Teddy Roosevelt, believed this species was an absolute reality. So there are people out there with enormous
sure.
credentials that believe this species is absolutely real.
Again, I want to go back to this because I think when you're talking about protection, if it's viewed as more hominid, right, than and I know humans are animals, but I just mean if it's seen more in the family of man than say in the family of apes as a pure primate, wouldn't it make sense to really push for maybe like human rights protection?
Absolutely. Well, actually,
as opposed to like an animal species sort of, you know, protection.
Yeah, well, actually, that would be discussed. What you're talking about, and primatologists battle over this every day, it's called the theory of mind.
Right.
Basically, human beings will give, will take gorillas out of zoos and everything if we can prove that they have the intelligence of something more than a four-year-old, that they can prove that they have consciousness and they have, there are certain criteria they have to meet for theory of mind. And we hope to prove that with Bigfoot, even before it's, or as it's scientifically classified, because, I mean, right now I can't, I don't have enough evidence to prove. I mean, they're very evasive and they do all these incredible things as I see them, but I mean, there are birds out there that do things that look very incredible, and they're just running on instincts. Little spiders make these intricately amazingly designed civil engineering marvels like bees do, but they're not intelligent. They don't qualify for the theory of mind. So it's really going to take a lot of research and a lot of time to bring that about, and that's just something we're very prepared to do. Yeah. But it's really going to take a lot of time, a lot of research. It's going to be a lot of work, and as you can imagine, there's no funding for Bigfoot studies right now.
Right. So, I'm fascinated by the theory of mind, and I actually want to do a whole show on that coming up, because I the effort to try to give apes human rights is quite a compelling claim, and it's being made by several well-known legal minds who say, well, look, under all of these criteria that we would apply to humans also apply to apes. I think that's fascinating, but I just think it might be easier in a way. Also, if you started doing it on a state-by-state basis, if you didn't go national, if you went to Washington State and you said, look, can we just get human rights protection theoretically that you cannot, if you knew that you were shooting a Bigfoot, that you cannot murder a Bigfoot any more than you could just shoot a human being in the woods?
Mm-hmm. And that's there is species protection in Skamania, Washington. And I always knew coming to the United States, it's going to be a lot easier than it is in Canada to get species protection, because in the U.S. they're so, I mean, like I say, there's already species protection for them. What I need to do, what I'm going to work on right now, probably the easiest route, and that's really what I'm going to go for right now, because when it comes to politics and laws, I really don't want to go there. But the easiest route is, honestly, if you don't have a tag to shoot an animal, if you don't have, you can't go and kill a bear any time of the year. You have to have a tag to do that. So if there's any unknown species out there that you can't identify, you shouldn't be shooting at. And that's why I get even support from forestry officers. They say, Bigfoot doesn't exist. That's the official opinion. The species is not real if you go talk to a forestry officer. That's the official position. So if you're shooting at something, if you think it's a bear and you're assuming it's Bigfoot, you have no right to shoot at it. If it's a man in a suit, you have no right to kill him. It's murder. If you're hallucinating and you see a tree stump or you think a moose is Bigfoot, you have no right to shoot it. So under no circumstances do you have the right to shoot this animal. And if it is a real species, it's not classified, and legally you have no right to be shooting that because it's an unclassified species, and you don't have the right to do that until
classified and tagged and the whole bit, right.
And
very interesting.
And studied in the whole thing. And that's actually where our premise is going to begin, just based on that. Once there's that protection for them, once it's absolutely legal and there's fines, and even more importantly, forestry officers will come and help us, because you were talking about earlier the two video things. I'll tell you, we went out there, and that was the only reason we went out there, was to get something repeatable. We had a forestry officer with 20 years experience tranquilizing big animals. He told us, and this is not public at all. We never told anybody. We're keeping all of our research quiet, because we know what happens when people discover a Bigfoot domicile. People infiltrate the region, and all sorts of bad stuff happen. Men with guns show up.
Has that happened in the past?
Oh, absolutely.
Where men with guns have shown up at a Bigfoot domicile?
Why wouldn't you?
I'm just asking, what happened then? If it happened in the past and men have showed up with guns in a Bigfoot domicile, what happened that we don't end up with a dead Bigfoot?
Because they don't know enough about the species to get anywhere near them, and what happens is the animals move away.
Okay.
They just have you have no idea how elusive these animals are. Their evasive techniques are beyond what any hunter could get near, especially because you don't know anything about the animals. And when people come in with guns, the species, the animals just move away. They lose their habitat. And that's probably the worst of it, is we're aware of now 3 deserted domiciles, and my biggest concern is, you know, how are these animals even going to survive? They have no tolerance for human habitation whatsoever. They have no tolerance for a human presence. Initially, we were going to try to find a new domicile close to a national park area, because you can't shoot any animals, you can't hunt in a national park area, so there's automatic protection already. The problem is, they have no tolerance for human habitation whatsoever. If people are hiking in the area, they will move away. They will stay away from humans at every chance they get. That's what makes them the most evasive animals on the planet. And, you know, that's why we need to ensure that when we look for a new domicile, that it doesn't become compromised, that we don't make the same mistakes that we have done before, because we had a domicile. We were out there when we shot pieces of Bigfoot evidence. We were studying the species. We were becoming illuminated to all the things they do to survive and live, and we lost it because men with guns show up. And they will never get near the species.
Why is it different for you to show up with cameras than men to show up with guns if their reaction to any human presence is to run away and evacuate their domicile?
because we knew precisely, most importantly, we knew exactly where the day watchers were. That's when they're most vulnerable, is when the main group is sleeping and the day watchers are about. So if you know precisely where a day watcher is that nobody else knows, and that's what we look for in a Bigfoot domicile. We look for the signs that a day watcher leaves behind. That's what I don't make public. But when we know precisely where, we use global positioning satellites to go, okay, we took topographical views. This is exactly the layout. This is exactly the terrain. This is precisely where the day watchers were. So we had a counter strategy, knowing everything that we knew about the animals. And even with that, we were mostly unsuccessful. We had to use other advantages, like there was a river there, and we had to use the terrain to our advantage. We had to evade any type of sensory perception they may have, because they're doing exceptional things. For some reason, the first time, one of the first times we went out, ever went out there, and we saw one of these animals, we're looking through binoculars miles away. As soon as we pop our head over the ridge and look with the binoculars, the animal leaves. How could it possibly have been aware of us? It's alerted to our presence immediately. So we go away and we have to do more research and, you know, increase our understanding, create what we call a Gigantopithecus cloaking device of sorts, and utilize that and try that, and that was effective for us the next time we were you know, we went out on our expedition. And again, we took those two pieces of video evidence to a forestry officer and said, look, we repeatedly got within 40 yards of these animals. You have a trank gun. You're a trank gun expert. You can use that. Could you tranquilize one of these animals? And fortunately for us, we lost our research site before we could tranquilize one of these animals, because something that people have to understand, if you ever try to trank them, incapacitate them, or provoke them in any way, they defend themselves. And there's a group of them. You have to remember, these animals don't leave their own behind, just like most other primate species do. Chimpanzees, human beings, obviously, gorillas are like that. So if you go out there, and I didn't take the advice of the First Nations people at the time, but if you go out there and you try to harm one of these animals or even trank them, they're not going to understand, hey, I just tranquilized your buddy, he's perfectly fine. They're going to come back and defend themselves, and you're not going to be able to tranquilize the rest of the group. They're going to violently defend themselves like every species has a right to. And I don't want to be there when that happens.
So you're pro or con tranquilizing one?
I wouldn't even. I would never attempt to tranquilize one again.
Okay, ever. You would not again.
No, never. I would. I actually never did get the opportunity to do that. Luckily for me, I'd lost my research site at that time, and I would never try to attempt that again at all. It was a foolish thing to do. I wasn't listening to wisdom of people that knew, and just think about the consequences of it. I know there's a group there. I'm very well aware there's more than one animal there. There's several, probably, at least I would say a minimum of 10.
Okay.
I know this species is devoted to each other, and they stand together at all costs. There's been 100 chronicles that will substantiate that, famous ones like Ape Canyon and Ruby Creek and stuff like that. So knowing that, I still went out there to tranquilize one of these animals, thinking, you know, I'm not going to hurt them. I'm still being a good guy. My intent is good, but they will not understand that. Of course they won't. You tell it to a grizzly bear. If you go out there, that's what the First Nations people use as an explanation. You go and tranquilize a cub, what are you going to do when mom comes back? Except this isn't going to be one mom. This is going to be a whole group of them, and they'll violently defend themselves. And these primates, Gigantopithecus, they're enormous. They're huge animals, three times the size of a gorilla, probably three times as strong, and I don't want to be there when these animals come back to defend themselves. I don't even want to put myself in that position. I'm afraid for anybody else who goes out and tries to do that, tries to throw a net over one. I don't want to be there for that, because you don't have to worry about the guy you incapacitated. You have to worry about a primate species that is exceptionally familiar with its area, was born and raised there, and it's going to do everything it can to defend himself. And it would be a terrifying situation. I don't want to ever have that transpire. So,
if they're so afraid of humans, why? What? How do you view those people who say that they have been attacked by a Bigfoot? I mean, for just doing nothing more than camping or, you know, walking through the woods.
Well, this is one interesting thing about primates is people talk about the rut. The main reason most people are successful hunting white-tailed bucks is because we have knowledge of a rut. It's at a certain time of year. Primates don't have ruts. They just like every species of primate, always females just have their monthly cycles.
Right.
So if there was a time when these animals, a particular time of the month, where males were competing with each other, or they were just being aggressive and assertive like male primates do when it's that time of the month, there's a female in heat, they might possibly become aggressive during those times. Or it could be that they're rearing a youth, or they've even lost, misplaced a youth, and they're just being defensive in the area. There's so many reasons for it that when you just break it down, I mean, the possibilities of it are just a reality.
That's right. I was just trying to reconcile the ultra-elusive, ultra-reclusive you know, description with those people who have just kind of come across them along the same path. Let me ask you about the, I'm going to go back to this again, because I'm sort of curious about this audio tape from the UP, and I haven't heard it yet. I don't know that it's been released yet, but it would be interesting to have that to compare to another audio tape of a Bigfoot that you endorse. I mean, one that you've heard that you go, well, this one has already been, at least, you know, for a period of time, stood up to scholastic scrutiny. So is there, I mean, that's what I'd like to, almost like to hear that tape from the UP and see whether it sounds like the other tapes of known Bigfoot appearances.
Yeah, it would be very, I keep my mind open. That's what's made me successful, is I always listen, and I really try to keep an open mind with everything I hear and explore all the possibilities of it. And it would be, you know what, if I heard that they had a tape of one of these animals, I would immediately contact them, and I would immediately bring to their attention, if they haven't heard about me already, just all the ramifications involved when you start taking on this species, and when you start, you know, provoking them or doing things with them. I don't want anybody to get hurt, especially because you know what will happen if a human being is publicly killed by one of these species. You know, we'll go out and we'll try to execute the species, and we don't care what the circumstances are of it. It's basically an all-out war. If some, like an example of somebody going into a national park and they take fish burgers and put it around their kids so it attracts the bear to the kid, and then it's ridiculous, the guy takes the photograph and the bear attacks his son, and then the bear gets killed after.
Right.
It was just an absolute ridiculous situation.
Yeah,
and
no, nobody
avoid stuff like that.
Nobody would want that, but would it, I mean, in your heart of hearts, I mean, wouldn't there be, if you could, under whatever circumstances, come across a Bigfoot carcass, whether it was from a hunter, whether it was from something else, wouldn't that be, in a way, I mean, as tragic as the circumstances might have be, in the great sort of timeline of intellectual history, wouldn't that be kind of this aha moment that you've been arguing for a very long time? Wouldn't it come as sort of a relief for you to be able to go there now? Now what's the next level? The next level is protection. I mean, wouldn't it finally give you the impetus to be able to move the needle on the kind of protection you're talking about?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's why I decided, my team and I decided to really pursue the bugs issue again, because I believe that happened. And, you know, if Bug's story really did transpire, then, you know, it's time for us to take advantage of that atrocious situation to ensure that never happens again. My focus is always to ensure and educate that that kind of ignorance doesn't transpire again, that we find the compromise between species and, you know, just ensure that nobody has to go out. I know of situations, I'm chronicling things right now, hugely substantiated confrontations where people have lost their lives to this species, and, you know, it's just out of ignorance. Somebody goes out and tries to shoot them, and, you know, they lose their life. And I'll have all these things.
We'll have next time we have you on, you can give, you'll have details on, like, the name of a person somewhere that was killed by a Bigfoot.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I can release that information now. Even far more than that. Just, I have so much information
okay.
for you guys.
We got to schedule it right away.